Welcome to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead here again to have some conversations with you about some stories that matter. There's always a lot going on in this country. There's always a lot going on in this city, and we are excited about meeting together once again to go through some of the issues that demand our attention. Well, folks, it's been 27 years since 1,600 black women pulled together and they put a full-page ad in the New York Times in support of Anita Hill. It's called African American Women in Defense of Ourselves. One of the black women behind this effort, Dr. Barbara Ramsey, you know her work with Black Lives Matter. She's also the president of the National Women's Studies Association. She put together this effort to have black women put up money on the table to take out a full-page ad to support Anita Hill, African American Women in Defense of Ourselves. It's been 27 years. I'm trying to figure out what, if anything, has changed. When you are trying to stand up to power, speak your truth, stand up against a man who's in a position of power and you are a woman, will you be believed? Dr. Christina Ford is not being believed. She's actually being doxxed. She's receiving death threats. And she is now making the decision about whether she's going to come forward and testify on Monday. We stand and we support her ability and her right to tell her story. Because if nothing else, people should have the platform to share their experiences and then have him share his account of what happened. We're going to talk more about that in the second hour. I want to go through what's taking place in the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings and why we're seeing something that looks very similar to Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill. So what are the differences? Folks, we're cutting in now because we're going to a press conference from Harford County Sheriff Gaylor talking about the shooting that happened this morning. Let's take a listen to that, and then we're going to talk on the other side.
It doesn't get out ahead of us, and before we have a chance to tell the families, and we don't want them watching it on TV or reading it somewhere on social media. So I thank everyone for their patience and understanding. I also have to, again, stand before a bank of microphones and thank the allied agencies, so many of whom are here represented behind me, but our partners from the FBI, the ATF, the DEA, our federal partners, the state police, natural resources police, transportation authority, Maryland Department of Transportation Authority, police department, Haverty Grace, Aberdeen, and Bel Air, our local municipal agencies, who all responded out here. And in fact, were some of the very first cars on the scene from the municipal agencies within that 5 minutes I spoke about earlier. This is a great partnership that we have in our county, and unfortunately we've been impacted by more than our fair share of these types of events, and as tragic as they are, we know and we have seen that they can happen anywhere in a moment's notice, and they do, and they're devastating to the communities where they occur. A basic recap of what I spoke about this morning, that at 9:06 this morning, called dispatch, received a call of shots fired at the Wright House Distribution Center, located at 1501 Perryman Road. Immediately, police officers from across the county responded and were on scene in approximately 5 minutes. Law enforcement, fire, and EMS units quickly paired up and went into the warehouse area, to the office area, into the warehouse area to look for the suspect and to look for victims and provide treatment where appropriate. At this time, I can confirm that there are 7 people who have been shot in today's incident, including the shooter. 3 people are suffering from injuries which they are expected to survive. 3 others are victims of our shooter who lost their lives here today. 2 at the scene and then 1 at the hospital. And the 4th loss of life is the victim. Is the suspect, our shooter. The victims' names, we are not in a position to release at this time. We still have to make notifications, and that's still a process that's ongoing. So we are not prepared to release the victims' names. We will get them out as soon as is possible. Our suspect is a lone female suspect, age 26, who had a last known address in Baltimore County. She has died at the hospital from a fatal injury, self-inflicted gunshot wound. It appears, again, as I said this morning, that she was armed with 1 handgun and several magazines. No shots were fired by any law enforcement responder. Our detectives are still working to establish a timeline, but At this time, what we know is that the suspect was a temporary employee employed here at the distribution center. She had reported for her workday as usual, and around 9 a.m. the shooting began, striking victims both outside the business and inside the facility. We do not at this time have a motive for this senseless crime. In the investigation, again, even though we're hours into this, it's still early in an investigation of this size and scope. But over the last several hours, our law enforcement teams, again from all the agencies represented behind me, have been actively clearing and searching the 210 square foot facility. It's a massive building, and that's only a third of it, and they've been through all parts of the one building, 2,010 square feet are all just Rite Aid. There's two other businesses that are equally big, and our law enforcement officers had to clear that entire building. At the same time, our detectives have been working tirelessly to interview anyone who was in the building or who might have information to help us further this investigation. I believe a short while ago, we tweeted out the phone number, again, that's being answered at the dispatch center. If there's people with information that can offer us related to the incident here today, to please reach out and so our detectives can be in contact with you. We are not releasing the suspect's information at this time. I've heard that it's already out in the public, but from our standpoint, the family there has not been notified.
Folks, we were just taking a moment to listen to the press conference from Harford County Sheriff Jeffrey Gaylor about the shooting that took place this morning. Yes, folks, you're hearing me correctly. There was another mass shooting that took place at a workplace. We want to talk about that in this hour because according to the Gun Violence Archive, there have been 261 mass shootings in this country since September 20th, 2018. Up until today, 261. Today's incident that happened in Aberdeen, throwing miles here from Baltimore City, marks 262. In 2017, there were 346 mass shootings. I want us to think about what that means, that there really seems to be no safe space at all. We have talked on this show about mass shootings taking place at schools. We talked about Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. We've talked about mass shootings taking place in public squares. And now, of course, thinking about what happened at the Capitol Gazette and what happened today at the Rite Aid Distribution Center, there is no safe space. I want to throw this question out to you. 410-319-8888. Do you feel safe at work? I mean, I think we all have some coworkers where we think they might do something, where we kind of question whether or not that person might have an amazingly different and strange response to something that happens in the workplace. I don't want to say the kind of comments that people make when they talk about that guy that we all know that seems a little unstable, or that woman that we all know that seems a little bit unstable, and we don't say anything. We bite our tongues. We let it pass. And then before you know it, we get in a situation where something happens. I've been thinking a lot about that today, about whether or not I feel safe on my jobs and what can we do to increase that. I mean, we're talking about workplace shootings today, and I invited Jada McCray. She has joined us before. She's the executive director of Better Tomorrow Starts Today. She's a licensed clinical social worker. I invited her on here to help us unpack a couple of things, including workplace trauma, and we're going to talk a little bit about sexual assault as well. Jada, how are you? Welcome back to the show.
Hello, Dr. Kim. I'm doing well. Thank you.
So what is getting me is that when we're dealing with these workplace shootings, as we're dealing with today, with seven people being shot, four of them, if I'm not mistaken, and I heard it correctly, four of them have died. Three of them are struggling to stay alive at this point. When we're thinking about our own jobs and the fear and concern that we have going into work that something might happen, I wanted you first to address, how do we deal with that? How do we adjust so that we can go back into work and try to find a place where we're comfortable on our own jobs?
You know, I think the most unfortunate thing about all of this is that we have adjusted. And we know that this is commonplace now. And if you think about it, about once a month, we have an issue where there's someone, either there's some kind of a public violence that takes place, whether it be at a school or a job or a public square, wherever it is. This is our new normal. And as dysfunctional as it is, it's something that we've begun to just expect. That I don't know about you, but when I saw the news flash today, I wasn't surprised. It wasn't like when it was with Columbine. And Columbine, I think, was in the 1990s.
Right, 1999, years ago.
Yeah, 1999. And I remember that, and I remember it was all over the news, and people were really shocked, and we went really in-depth about it, and about loners in school, and about mental health in school, and about bullying. And there was a lot of attention paid to these things because it was something that wasn't, it wasn't commonplace. Now, once a week, I wonder how long what happened today in Harford County and Aberdeen and the warehouse, I wonder how long that's going to be on the news cycle, because it's something that has become so commonplace in our society.
Now, what is interesting is I had the same response. I wondered if the national news media, if they were going to even pick it up.
I said,
you know, because there's just so many shootings. There were at least three shootings here in Baltimore City yesterday, I think within 1 hour. So shootings are not new. I think my concern is that there doesn't seem to be any safe places at all. And I want to take out from this, you know, this whole criteria I'm putting up here, people who have guns in the home. Because if you have guns in the home, we know all the research shows you're more likely to be a victim. So other than the home, if you don't have any guns in your home, there doesn't seem to be any safe spaces. How do we adjust to that? Or is a concern we have adjusted, and that's what makes it such a concern?
So that is, you know, I think that when something happens in a society that is not of the norm, that's something where people revolt against it. We revolt against it, and we do things to make a change. Every society decides what's acceptable and what's not. What rules shall we all play by? And it seems as this is if this particular thing with people shooting and mass shootings that are occurring, that we've decided as a society, whether we are saying it explicitly or implicitly by our behaviors, that this is something that's now acceptable, and it's something that we have to now just guard against just in case.
And what
when
is
was
it?
The last time you went to a movie theater and you didn't think, just for even a split second, somebody could come in here and shoot us up?
Oh, no, that's one of the reasons. I know this sounds so strange, but it's one of the reasons why I don't go to late-night movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it can happen at any time, but when I think about that shooting in Colorado that happened during the screening of Batman, if I'm not mistaken, that was some type of midnight screening.
Yep.
And so I always think maybe it's safer if I go on a Sunday afternoon or go to a midday show. Like, in my mind, I'm thinking daytime is a nice cover that may keep you safe if somebody does want to come up and shoot up a movie theater.
With that, do you see how you've adjusted your behavior
to
fit the reality versus railing against the reality and changing the reality?
Yeah, that's true.
To go back to social norms.
But I don't even know how to change the reality. I mean, it's interesting because when we start talking about these mass shootings, and some of them, Jader, are absolutely alarming, right? Marjorie Stoneman Douglas was an alarming incident, and it did stop us in our tracks. Las Vegas, I mean, that was alarming. What, 800 rounds of ammo? Over 500 people injured. Okay, so that was alarming. It stopped us in our tracks. But Capital Gazette affected us because we're here in Maryland. But across the world, it didn't have the same kind of resonance as, say, Las Vegas or Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, for example.
But even think about Las Vegas. Can you recall the date that it happened? Everyone knows September the 11th.
Right.
We always remember that date because it was the first. It wasn't the first time that we had terrorism on our soil,
right,
but it was
true.
So rare. It didn't happen a lot. It's not something that happened to in America a lot. So everyone remembers September the 11th. Do you remember right offhand the date that Las Vegas occurred? Nobody does.
No.
I remember because it just happens to be my birthday. But other than that, I'm sure, you know. But other than that, I'm sure. I was like, oh, geez, that's awful. But you know. So, it's become so commonplace that it doesn't stand out anymore.
Right. I mean, I don't remember the date of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, but I remember the incident. It's kind of like when you mentioned Columbine. If you are of a certain age, you don't know what day Columbine happened, but you remember Columbine, the incident. Like, you don't get confused. There's some incidences that take on a name of their own. Like, we'll always know 9/11 is not about the date. Like, 9/11 refers to that. And as Columbine, as Las Vegas. You knew I wasn't talking about gambling in Las Vegas.
Like,
I mean, we were talking about that specific incident because it was so jarring. So now here's another one. I mean, you're talking 7 people got shot, which is alarming, of course. But is that enough to make people adjust the reality rather than adjust their behavior, what you mentioned earlier?
The sad part is I don't think so. I think that as the body counts rise, again, it's just like being poisoned a little bit at a time. And so we your body, you begin to get acclimated to it, and we've adjusted. And all of the things that we're talking about, like adjusting the times that we go to the movies, like looking at exits when you go places, or being aware of a coworker that you may feel a little apprehensive about his behavior. We've all had quirky coworkers before, but now we know the difference, and we know to look out for those things that may be a little bit off or a little bit more off than we were willing to acknowledge before. Even children, when my children returned back to school in September, the earlier this month, they were given information about emergency protocols and active shooters.
Oh, that's the ALICE training, because we talked to a student who wrote an op-ed. She's a senior at Carver, 11th grade, excuse me, and she wrote an op-ed talking about going through the ALICE training, learning how to be alert, what's the lockdown procedure, talking about the incident, like what do you do next, how do you disrupt, but teaching students what to do, because we're now expecting students to almost be the frontline defense here. When something happens, is that because while we are adjusting to this new reality, we're also realizing that we can't keep everyone safe?
That's exactly what it is. Again, it's now it's okay by our society. So whatever the lip service is, I just want you to know that, like, even though everyone expresses their outrage, people respond when there's real and genuine outrage. And when there's real and genuine outrage about a thing, societies have a way of self-correcting. Our society, for whatever reason, has decided that this is acceptable behavior.
And that is a problem.
We know it by our actions. We don't know it by what we say. We know it by our actions. Our actions have determined that this is acceptable behavior that we as individuals need to guard against if it happens to us, if we happen to be in a situation like this.
Well, then I want to ask for parents, because now I think many of us are having these conversations with our children. I know that I sit with my sons every time there's a mass shooting at a school. We talk about what are the exit procedures at your school? What do you do if you hear something? Where should you go? And my son went through a number of scenarios. He said, well, what if I'm in the hallway and there's a shooter in the building? And what if I'm in the classroom? Should I try to help? Should I get involved? Like a number of different scenarios. But my children are older. I mean, 17 and 15 years old. And so in addition to talking to them about the potential of a school shooting, I'm also talking to them about the potential of dealing with police officers, right? Because these are young African-American, you know, tall men. So I have to deal with that. It's both. It's neither an either or. But for parents of younger children, how do we have these conversations?
Again, I think it's the same thing that we talked about before when we talked about people, predatory behavior on the internet and how to guard your children. Your children are born for the time in which they are born. And so they'll acclimate to the society in which they are born into. And so for my children, if I were really devastated about an active shooter situation, it was unheard of when I was in elementary school. My children also talked about lockdown and all of those procedures, and they talked about it as if it were second nature, if it were just something that, like a fire drill. This is their reality. And so if they express that they're really concerned about it and they're afraid and they're frightened, then you can process those things with them and you can assure them. Again, I've said this before and I'll say it a million times. A child's home base, if a home base is secure, then your child can go out and venture into the rest of the world. We have to be really mindful of making sure that our home is a calm and peaceful and loving and secure environment.
Now, we have people checking in. Oh, please go ahead. I'm sorry, Jada. Please finish.
No, I'm sorry. So if your child has that, then they can go forth and move into the world. Because, again, the world will prepare them. They're prepared for the world that they're going to encounter. It is their, this is their time. The time was, you understand what I'm saying?
I understand. Saying.
Just like you can give a 2-year-old a smartphone and they know exactly what to do with it.
It's this time, the time they're created. Now, one of the people are checking in from Facebook Live. Evelyn Brown Young has said, I think every employer, church, school, should provide active shooter training. Not one of those online trainings, but an interactive training. And the interesting thing is that a couple of schools have tried that, Jada, and what they found to be of a concern is when they try to do kind of this active training situation where they put the students in the situation, they don't inform them, the results of that are it was triggering from students. To think that there was actually a shooter in the building, but the officers believe that the only way to teach the material so that it matters and that it sticks is you have to simulate it like it's real. If not, you just go through the fire drill procedures, but you never move fast because you always think it's a drill.
Well, I can imagine it being triggering and terrifying for children to believe that they're actually in those situations. And that's also, when you think about it, the militarization of our society as well. The children have to be ready for combat.
Oh,
and so we do that with soldiers. We train them. They go to basic training, and they have war games and war training so that when they're actually in the situation, they'll know what to do by rule.
Right.
And we want the same thing for our children. but they're civilians.
I mean, listen to how dangerous that sounds, training our children. Now, we have Layla chiming in. Layla's a new caller from Baltimore. Welcome to the family, Layla. How are you?
I am doing great.
Thank you for joining us.
I have a comment.
Yes.
I suffer from post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Yes,
ma'am. This very day, over 10 years ago, someone pulled a gun on me at work. It wasn't intended for me. That person was terminated from work, from the job, and she had got fired, and she pulled out a gun, and I just happened to be there. Thank God she didn't blow out my brains, but however, I believe no workplace is safe at this point. I believe no workplace is safe at this point. And I've had over 20 different jobs since then, maybe even more. It's hard for me to keep a job. I don't feel as though I'm safe anywhere at this point, especially in a workplace.
Jada?
So what happens and what's happened with you, I'm so sorry that you even experienced that. But what happens is that we all feel as if there's a certain responsibility that we have for our body and there's a certain degree of safety that we have. Just walking through life, we all know we should be on guard with something, but when something that you determine to be a safe space is violated, it's really hard to then trust other spaces to be safe as well.
Okay. Well, thank you for letting me know that. Mm-hmm. At this moment, I'm still suffering. I'm still going through job to job to job.
Mm-hmm. Now, Layla, have you gone through any type of counseling at all? I mean, I'm just wondering, Jada, if that also might be a way to deal with some of the PTSD.
So I would encourage you to go ahead. I'm sorry. If you haven't sought counseling, I encourage you to get counseling because there's a way out of there's life on the other side of this.
Okay, let me just tell you. Yes, I have went through counseling. Actually, I was seeing a psychiatrist, and I've been on and off medication for some time.
Mm.
I've been off balance ever since.
Mm-hmm. So I just want to encourage you to view it this way. If you'd been in a car accident and it hadn't been a situation with the person bringing the gun to your job, if you've been in a car accident and you've broken your arm, you break your arm, you go to the doctor, you get treatment, you get rehabilitation services, but every now and then your arm is still going to hurt when it rains. So even though you have a fully functioning arm, the remnant will always be there, but you can still learn how to use and enjoy your arm again. So I encourage you to stick with counseling and stick with therapy and continue to heal, because even though that experience, we don't have a time machine, and we can't ever take that experience away from you because you were there and you lived through it. On the other side of it is healing. And even though we have to always acknowledge that it's something that happened, you can still enjoy your life.
All right, I'm going to hold it there.
Thank you very much.
Oh, no problem, Layla. Layla, don't hang up. We want to give you Jada's information because we want you to follow up. Jada, I know you're going to be with us for a little while during the next segment, so if you can hold it here. Folks, we're going to talk to Jada when we come back. How do you deal with the impact of sexual assault and sexual harassment? We're dealing with that with the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings. Is it triggering to you? Jada will give us some solutions about what we can do to get to life on the other side of that experience as well. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Stay with us.
Jazz is an essential part of the universal language of music, one that anyone can understand and connect to. Music like this deserves a secure home on the radio dial. Become a part of the team that helps make great jazz possible. Do your part now by making a donation to keep jazz on public radio 88.9 alive and well. Go to WEAA.org and click the Donate Now button. Thank you for listening.
September 22nd, Restoration Temple Apostolic Center will hold its first annual community fair filled with fun activities for the family, helpful community resources, and health screenings. The event will take place 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at 5225 Hamilton Avenue. There will be face painting, bouncy houses, local vendors, community resources, and health screenings administered by medical professionals and will include blood pressure, heart health, mental health, and nutritional dietary health. For more information, 410-483-5433.
News headlines, events, podcasts, and more. WEAA.org.
Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K.Y.'s Whitehead. We're speaking with Jada McCray, a licensed clinical social worker, and we're talking about workplace trauma. Given the fact that there was another mass shooting today, took place at the Rite Aid Distribution Center. 7 people were harmed in the melee. 4 people died. 3 are in the hospital being treated. And we definitely want to send out our prayers and our thoughts to the families and friends, to the co-workers who were impacted by what happened today. I think that we need to start to recognize when something like this happens, it affects all of us. Aberdeen is very close to Baltimore City, but I'm thinking whether it's Aberdeen, Jada, or it's happening in Las Vegas or in California, that this is our country and these things affect all of us. And it affects how we see ourselves. So I've asked Jada to stay with us because I want to just switch topics just a bit. Because earlier this week, we were talking about the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings, thinking about Dr. Ford, the woman who said that he sexually assaulted her, I believe, over 30 years ago. They were 17 years old. It happened at some party. He was drunk. He threw her on the bed. She said that he put her his hand over her mouth and she was afraid for her life. And she was assaulted. And it's been years. And now he's in the midst of going through a confirmation hearing to be a United States Supreme Court justice. For those of you of a certain age, it should harken back that time when we sat through and we watched on primetime television the Clarence Thomas Anita Hill hearing, where from that incident, Anita Hill was shamed. She was attacked. The things that were said about her, the way that she was able to work to keep her career moving forward. Dr. Ford has not testified yet, and it's already happening. Jada, what I'm trying to figure out, because we have so many men and women, too, saying, well, why can't she just get over it? And what is she even talking about? And what's the big deal about something that happened so long ago? Why hasn't she moved forward? Can you first speak about how these type of traumatic incidents are? There's no timeline and there's no what you call time machine to just stop the pain. Can you help people to understand why that's important to recognize?
Well, Dr. K, you know, the Bethel Vanderkolt talks about this in great detail in his book, The Body Keeps the Score. And I absolutely love it, and I recommend it for anyone who's a therapist that's just starting out in trauma for them to read and really understand the impact that trauma has on the body and how there is no space and time that can heal it just on its own without actually taking the time to do the work to heal. For this person that has happened, she can have a flashback today or tomorrow that will bring it back like it happened just yesterday. You know, and I think that we have to give we have to be respectful of that and respectful of her and her experience and realize that whether it happened 40 years ago or 30 years ago, if it happened yesterday, this is raw for her and it's real for her. And she was violated and her body responded to being violated and her mind responded to being violated. So to downplay it and to act as if she should be over it when we didn't walk in her shoes and you don't have to live her life and you didn't experience that and you didn't go through that with her, then it's just so, I think it says a lot about the patriarchy and toxic masculinity. And to hear all of these people who make our laws and, you know, in Congress and the Senate, and they come out and they try to discount it as if it's not a very real thing. And I just think it's absolutely shameful. And it's the reason why a number of people, just like she's like millions of other women who never say a word to anyone. And so she decided that this man, from her experience, shouldn't be in power because she knows firsthand what he's capable of. And for us to deny her experience is just another violation.
And what is interesting is that the pain of this, the terror, the fear that comes along with being sexually assaulted and sexually harassed. What is interesting is that what started trending this week on Twitter, women coming forward again. Now, you know, we've seen this before back when Donald Trump said, grab them by the, you know, the body parts. Women started tweeting about their assault. Then we saw it with the hashtag Me Too, the movement that was started by Tarana Burke 11 years ago now. And now here we are again. And this time people are coming forward and saying things like, you know, I'm 70 years old. It happened to me when I was 11. Mm-hmm. You know, I have not forgotten, and it is hard to move on. And so I want to go ahead, please, Jada.
It really shapes the experience in the life of people, and it can be it's a defining moment for people and how they heal from it. And I've learned this just not only through the training that I've done in treating people for trauma, but also I worked at DSS, the Department of Social Services, in the Child Protective Service Unit. And a lot of times the way that, in which it was disclosed and the reception that the person who has been assaulted receives truly, truly, truly impacts the trajectory of the healing as well.
Now, folks, I want to open up the lines. I'm sorry, Jade. I want to open up the lines because I know that we don't have much time with you. We have you. They get to a quarter to four. So, folks, let's open up the phones. 410-319-8888. Give us a call. Tell your story. I mean, Jada is here to help us move through some of the pain that we may be dealing. Help us get what she called, which I love what she said, that there's life on the other side of trauma. There really is. We have Anita on the phone. Anita's a new caller. Welcome to the family. And she's calling from Laurel. How are you, Anita?
I'm good. How are you guys?
I'm fine. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for having my call. I just wanted to say that I'm like seventh in my family. So I have three brothers and three sisters. And thinking about it statistically, of those four girls, three of us have suffered from sexual assault, rape. So when you think about it statistically, most people, we don't say anything about it. There was never any police involvement in that sort of thing. It was three separate incidents. And it's just something that we have to think of as far as the way that men are raised or taught, and that parents need to set boundaries and to teach their sons how to interact with women and how to respect other people's bodies. And you can add on to that male superiority or white privilege.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It just goes, it's just something that it's a tidal wave of unfortunate circumstances for all communities. That's my comment.
Thank you so much, Anita. So with that in mind, Jada, some of the things that I heard Anita say in terms of parents teaching their sons not to engage in this behavior. I mean, the conversation that we have with our boys, it's not, the shame is not on the woman. You know, her clothes made me do it. She was asking for it in her behavior. The shame is on the men, the boys. Why is it that her clothes make you want to rape her?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that you can look at, you know, her short blouse or her skirt and you think rape? Like, how did you get to, how did you make that incredible leap into the complete violation of a person's body and space and into criminal behavior? And that's the area that I think we need to investigate. Not what she's wearing, but why her clothes make you think about raping her.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's always interesting to me that we can talk about personal responsibility when it comes to, you know, finances and poverty, but we never can talk about personal responsibility when it comes to the man's violation of a woman. It doesn't matter what a woman has on, she should never be physically violated because that's her person. And until we start fully seeing women as separate and independent human beings and not property, because that's what happens in a patriarchal society, that women, no matter what the laws say, how we view women is something that should be possessed, owned, obtained, and ruled over. And so until we can fully embrace that women are autonomous creatures and have a right to their own bodies, then this will continue to happen. We live in a very violent society that for up until a little while was under the guise of civility. So in America, in our society in the USA, we talk about being politically correct and being civil towards each other. But what we do, we live in a very, very violent society that has a thin veneer of civility over top of it, which is why we have things like the issues with police brutality and gun violence and physical violence and rape culture.
Right.
We have these things in our society because it's who this society truly is, not what we pretend to be.
And the ways in which we allow women to be put in this position. I'm thinking about the fact that Dr. Ford is dealing with death threats. And so many of our calls have said they told people and they weren't believed. They told their mother. And they weren't believed.
Exactly.
They told their family. I mean, so you're dealing on top of the trauma of what happened, the rape or the harassment or the assault that took place. Now you deal with the trauma of being shamed and being seen as a liar.
So So I'd like to say this, and I've found this to be true through so many, you know, helping so many people. It's not that they weren't believed. It's that people chose not to believe them. Because to believe them would require such a shift in your brain and your lifestyle, or whatever it is that you believe, it required a shift in your thinking or whatever your plan was. Whether it be a brother or a cousin or father or stepfather, whoever it is, or another female relative that inflicted this trauma on you, to believe that child means that you then have to see that perpetrator in a new light.
Okay, we haven't looked back to the phone calls. We have Paul on the phone from East Baltimore. Paul, how are you?
How are you doing, Dr. Kagan? Your guests. I think it's a great subject. But I think that the sexual education needs to be taught to the women as well as the young men. They had to have a certain level of respect for themselves. I had two girls, and I always tell them, y'all the cream de la creme. You can't dress like that. You know, that was from day one. When my friends dress like that, I say, well, you can't hang with them. You know, that was something that I told them. I said, because you dress like a tramp. If you look like a tramp, sometimes people would treat you like a tramp. And I say, and that's what they call women. I say, men can dress up and take their shirts off and all those things. I say, as soon as women do it, they become a sex object. And I think that's where we get it at. The TV and everything has made the woman a sex object. Then you got these young kids and they got the internet and they got the young adults and they having sex and you're going walk down the street in an alley, they having sex.
Well, let me ask you this, Paul. Let me ask you this, Paul. How old are your daughters?
My daughter right now, my oldest daughter is 29 and the other one is 26.
Now, you're talking about the fact that women, you know, have become sex objects. I guess I take issue, or I'm a bit concerned, and Jade, I'm going to ask you as a professional in this area, with his use of the term tramp, telling his daughter that her friends dress like tramps, and if she dresses like this, then she's a tramp. I'm not sure how that gets us to a productive and healthy conversation about this.
I didn't say that if she dressed like that she's a tramp. I say that's how people will look at you, or certain individuals will look at you, especially people that have a sickness and things like that, or don't care too much for the law or nothing like that. They go to the strip joints and things like that, and they drink alcohol and get high and use that as an escape to take something from somebody they had no business touching and now, things of that nature.
Let me get Jada to respond. Jada, can you respond to this? Hold on one second, Paul, because I do want Jada to chime in. Jada, can you help us kind of through this?
You know, I take issue with the fact that I feel like I even need to defend this position, but this is the way that our society has decided that it is. A lot of women that I've treated, they weren't just dressing in a sexually suggestive situation. They weren't dressing in a way that was erotic. You know, they weren't dressing in an erotic manner or in a manner that we've decided is an inappropriate manner as a society. They weren't dressed in a way that would elicit any kind of, they didn't invite the harm. And that's what I think we need to realize and we need to truly understand is that harm doesn't need an invitation. Harm just needs an opportunity.
Right.
And a lot of times perpetrators create the opportunity for harm. So again, sexual assault and sexual violence, it can happen to anyone, including men. And we also need to be able to recognize that as well. But because of the shame that we associate with sexual violence, we don't allow men the safe spaces to even disclose that something like this has happened to them. And if it was just about dressing in a certain way, then why is it that so many women have been raped and assaulted throughout time in history? This isn't a new phenomenon in which people were being raped. This has happened since the beginning of time. So we have to ask ourselves, what do we need to change about who we are as a society to say that this is now unacceptable behavior? That a woman can have full autonomy over what she wants to wear, and she doesn't have to be raped. She's not asking for rape. If a man, again, because we live in America and we say that all people are equal, if a man dressed in a way that was sexually suggestive, no one would ever think that it was appropriate for him to be raped just because he's walking down the street or if he attends a certain party. No one would ever find that to be acceptable. And those men that you're talking about that walk around with their shirts off, no one ever says, you know what, let me pull him into an alley and violate his person.
Right.
No one does that to them. We think it's acceptable as women. And even though, I mean, for women, for that to happen to women. And even though, again, it's the same thing that we always say, there are laws against a lot of things in this country. But you know people, and I would say you know countries by their fruits. So what we say and what we do are totally different things. And this is evidence with Judge Kavanaugh right now. This is evidence right now.
Thank you so much, Paul, for chiming in. You know what's interesting, Jada? I just want to drill down a little bit deeper in the little time I have left with you, just to kind of bring out just one more question, because I think that you just touched on something when we were talking about these clothes, something that Paul said, right? You know, even telling your daughter, no, you can't dress like that, because if you do, then they, whoever the they is, the they he's talking about who drink and smoke and go to strip bars, whoever that they is, they're going to see it as an invitation to harm you. And this idea that harm doesn't need an invitation, harm just needs an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
How do we get to a point where we can help men primarily and some women as well? How do we get them to a point where they can understand that rape is not the fault of the victim, but the fault of the perp? Like, rape is the only crime where we actually begin to blame the victim as well.
You know, I think the first thing that we need to do is education for our quote-unquote good boys. Because, and I say that because we think about the rapist and how can we change the behavior of the rapist to not make him believe that this is acceptable. How can we change the behavior of the quote-unquote good boys that stand by and allow for this to take place and the conversation for this to take place? So the ones who could be like my son or yours who are at a party and know that something is happening behind a door that shouldn't be happening behind a door. So we have to put the responsibility and the onus of every member of our society to protect each other and see each other as equals. And until we do that with our quote-unquote good boys and teach them that women are their equals, and it's not just a boys' club and it's not just boys being boys. And with Kavanaugh, one of the things that I found was interesting was that he was 17 when this happened. He was 17 when this happened, and we can justify in the media why he was just a boy being a boy.
Right.
But Trayvon Martin deserved to die. Because George Zimmerman felt threatened.
Right. By a boy.
By a boy. So I really want you to. So it's manhood as we describe it and boyhood as we give excuses for it is in the eye of society at that time and what society deems it to be. It's the same thing with women in appropriate and inappropriate dress and who was asking for it. Because if that's the case, if we're asking for it because of how we dress, well, tell me what happened in the 1800s when everyone was dressed to their you know, from the jaws all the way down to the
feet. So what happened to American enslavement? I just think that people need to get to a better understanding around this topic. And every time we're confronted with it in society, we can't seem to get to a good place. Oh, Jada McCray, I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
Folks, we're going to revisit this topic. We're going to stay with this topic, and we want to talk about it. While we're transitioning a bit to talk deeper about Kavanaugh, I want to go to a clip here from MSNBC with Kavanaugh on Dr. Ford. I want to take a listen to this, and then I want to have us discuss the ways in which we as a society talk about sexual harassment, sexual assault, and really where do we go from here. So let's take a listen to the clip.
Since Wednesday, she has watched as that bare bones version of her story became public without her name or her consent, drawing a blanket denial from Kavanaugh. And roiling a nomination that just days ago seemed all but certain to succeed. Now Ford has decided that if her story is going to be told, she wants to be the one to tell it. That story involves allegations that a teenage Brett Kavanaugh pinned her to a bed, groped her, and attempted to take her clothes off. Ford alleges that when she tried to scream, Kavanaugh put his hand over her mouth to the point where she thought he might, quote, inadvertently kill her. Kavanaugh and the White House have categorically, unequivocally denied the allegations.
So it's interesting that here we are, where we're once again looking at those at the highest seats of power, and we are questioning their actual behavior. We're questioning their moral character. What is interesting about the United States Supreme Court that I think we have to recognize is that once it happens, once they pull the trigger on the confirmation, there's no take back. You cannot do it over. He will be in that position for the rest of his life. We saw that with Clarence Thomas. 27 years ago, we were at this place, and there were some women who said, no, this shouldn't happen. I know my grandmother was one of them, saying there's no way that a man should go to the highest level of office in this country, because a Supreme Court justice, it doesn't matter who the president is. You remain in office. You can shape policy for maybe 100 years. Think about how long it took between Plessy v. Ferguson, 1896, and Brown v. Board of 1954. It took that amount of time to end legalized segregation. The Supreme Court is a very powerful branch of government, and here's a man where we're calling into question his character. And I know you're saying, well, he was only 17. I'm sorry, I have a 17-year-old, and I'm telling him now, the things you do now is actually shaping your character. It's shaping who you're going to be in this world. I know the type of man you're going to be. I'm watching what you're doing now. 17 years old, you attempt to rape someone, you're holding someone down. That hasn't changed. That's who you are, and that's what I want to talk about. But maybe he's grown. Well, if he's grown, then you know what? Let's talk about it. Let's testify. Let's do an investigation, and let's get to the root of what the truth is. Let's talk about it here. 410-319-8888. Maybe the time has passed. Maybe we don't go back there. But I'm thinking we do. When it comes to these type of issues, we don't let it go. So if you don't want to go back there with the Kavanaugh thing, what if Kavanaugh at 17 years old, I'm just throwing it out, 17 years old, he was a member of, just say he was a member of the KKK and he's at some big lynching rally, 17 years old. Do we not bring it up today because too much time has passed by? Or is that different? I'm saying it's not. It's the same thing. Sexual assault and sexual harassment is a trigger for a lot of people, and it should be talked about, and it should be investigated. And before we put someone into office, we do to Kavanaugh what we should have done to Trump, because there's no way Trump should have been able to say, I'm grabbing her by the, add that word in there, and still be sitting at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Folks, come on now. We have Gene on the phone from Pikesville. Gene, how are you?
Yeah, pretty good, Dr. Kate. What, everybody's afraid to call in?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm glad you're calling. It's a heavy topic. I think people are listening today.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, at 20 years old, you know, experimenting with drugs, I woke up in full clohetis with a woman that I did not intend to have clohetis with.
Right.
And it frightened the heck out of me.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, she maneuvered me in that situation. So is that rape?
Now, you were 20. How old was she?
She was about 21, 20.
She was 21 years old.
And right,
you passed out. You passed out, and
yes,
you woke up, and you realized that you had something happened between the two of you.
No, I was in full clohetis.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to not be so graphic as we are. You know, we have children listening. I get it.
That's the Latin terminology.
I know. I got it.
For the act.
I know, sir. But you passed out, and you woke up, and you were doing it. That's what happened. So you're asking, did she rape you? Did you feel violated?
Yes, I did.
Now, what did you do about it? Did you tell someone? Did you write it down?
Have
you been able to move forward?
I felt very uncomfortable, and I explained it to my girlfriend. But I was accused of being messing around.
Okay, by your then girlfriend.
Yeah.
Now, since that incident for you, this happened to you, because if you look at rape is a type of sexual assault, usually involving sexual intercourse or other forms of sexual penetration.
Right.
And folks, I just want to tell parents, if you're listening with your children, we are having a really raw and open conversation about sexual assault and sexual harassment and rape. So I do want to give that note there. The act may be carried out by physical force, coercion, abuse of authority, or against a person who is incapable of giving valid consent, such as one, this is where it comes to you, which is why I wanted to read it, Gene, as one who is unconscious, incapacitated, has an intellectual disability, or is below the legal age of consent. You were 20, you were 20, she was 21, but you're saying you were unable, you were incapacitated, you were unable to give consent. Is that correct?
Yeah, that was not my intent.
Right.
But it might have been a thing of whether or not, you know, being a male sometimes that you want to be in control.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't in control. I lost I feel like I lost control, and control was taken by somebody else.
Right.
And I think that's the issue when it is not mutual.
Right. And rape does happen to men. You're absolutely correct. If you're unable to give consent, if you feel like you have no control in the situation, you're unconscious or you're incapacitated, below the legal age of consent, that is absolutely rape. So, Gene, have you gone into counseling? Are you thinking about doing that, sir? Because we do have a number for you.
Thank you very much. But I'm 70 years old, and mm-hmm. And as I went through life, I had to learn,
right.
and deal with this, and just in relationships. So I understood that as a man, you sometimes are manipulated into situations, just like women are.
Yeah.
So the reason I called was because you said. You made a blanket statement. You said men need to understand this about women.
Let me just make a note.
No, you said,
I say men and some women too. I always try to say some women too.
You say some women.
Yeah,
but
some
you didn't
women.
But you didn't say some men.
No,
you said
I didn't
men.
Say some men. I did say all men.
Yes,
I did say all because I believe we're in this culture of toxic masculinity. That as we are teaching our sons, that there is a culture on the opposite side that is pushing up against the ways in which we're teaching our sons, whether it's in movies or advertising. That every step of the way, there's this teaching about manhood and about control. I'm looking at
I have a son.
Yes,
and so I had to tell my son is like you watch your little self because you can be taken advantage of. There are also some women. Who are more powerful than men and know how to manipulate? Did you see what's his name? I get the Jewish Weinstein. Is that his name?
Yes.
The producer on PBS the other night. The
special? I did not. Yeah. But I'll write it down.
I'll recommend that you look at that.
All right. Thank you so much, Gina. I appreciate you calling and sharing your story. I think it's important in this conversation to hear from men as well, men who have been in this situation and are willing to come forward and share. We have Ayana on the phone from Baltimore. Ayana, how are you?
I love the way that you finessed that. Thank you.
No problem. And you know what, Ayana? You know, they're giving me the hard break, so I'm going to ask you to hold on, Ayana. Just hold on over the break. Let's get through the commercial, and then you and I are going to talk on the other side. Mark, Linda, Ernest, don't hang up. We are going to continue this conversation once we get this quick update from MTA.